Welcome to another edition of the NHL Executive Suite. I'm Deb Placey, and we're really excited to have with us one of the greatest scorers in the history of the National Hockey League, a Lady Bing winner and now a general manager, which means he's a gentleman and a scholar. He's the Hockey Hall of Famer, Ron Francis. Thanks for doing this, Ron. How are you?
I'm doing well, Deb. Thanks for having me.
Named the new general manager of the brand new Seattle expansion franchise last spring. Tell us what a typical day is like for you now.
I tend to describe it as treading water in the deep end, but hopefully we'll get to be able to hang on to a side here pretty soon. Just a lot of things. Really exciting, though. I think it's not an opportunity you get every day to build a professional franchise from scratch, so having that opportunity to hire the people that you want to hire and build a culture you want to have and try and build a successful franchise is extremely exciting, and we're looking forward to the challenge.
Well, it's interesting because you're a couple years away from playing or at least, you know, a year and a half away from playing or, you know, a year. It starts to get quicker and quicker. But, you know, from the outside, you think, you know, how could they possibly have their day filled 24/7? You have so much time ahead of you. How do you really feel your day? Do you feel like, you know, it's coming soon?
Yeah, no. You know, I think when you walk into an existing organization, you take for granted a lot of things that are kind of in place. You know, we're building everything from the ground up. You know, we're building a brand new arena here. So that's in progress. We're trying to build out a brand new practice facility with three sheets of ice for the community, as well as our main practice locker room and our administrative offices. We're also, trying to get our hands on an American Hockey League franchise, and we have that. You know, put that in Palm Springs and see where things go from there. But it's a lot of moving parts. But even little simple things like, you know, scouting. We didn't have any kind of scouting platform in place. So, you know, we got to negotiate that and build that and then find scouts. And so a lot of little things that just sort of the pile up.
Well, I think if you tell scouts that the AHL team is going to be in Palm Springs, you'll get a few takers.
I think we won't have any shortage of people that want to go to Palm Springs for sure.
Let's talk a little bit about Seattle, because it used to be, when you thought of Seattle, it was, you know, flannel shirts and Pearl Jam, and now it's Starbucks and technology. What's it been like for you so far, the city?
Actually, very impressive. You know, I think one way to describe it, I think there's currently 43 cranes in the air in Seattle.
Wow, they're building.
Yes, they are building. And it's interesting, our preview center that we have to, you know, entertain potential ticket purchasers or suite holders. We take them in and show them this video, and one aspect of the video talks about what downtown Seattle looks like now, what it'll look like with the buildings that are under construction, and then in addition, the buildings that have permits moving forward that will be completed by 2022-23. And it's absolutely incredible, the construction going on here. But it's, you know, it's a very beautiful place as well. You come into the city, and on the left is the Puget Sound, and over the hill on the right is Lake Washington. And a lot of greenery, a lot of mountains in the distance, so a lot of cool things to sort of add to the overall flavor of Seattle.
It is kind of crazy to think it's such a good fit for the NHL that there hasn't been a team there.
Yeah, no, I don't know why, but certainly the fan base here is very passionate. It's a great sports town. Obviously a lot of headquartered companies in this market, and I think it's a franchise that'll do well in the National Hockey League for a long time.
So let's talk just a minute about the fans. I know you're not pitching any names for teams or colors or mascots or logos. Are you letting others handle that? Do you have a favorite so far?
We do have people that are handling that, and we've actually hired a company as well that's helping with that. So they're in the process. That decision will be made, I think, ultimately by our chairman and as David Bondeman, but they are working through the process, and hopefully sooner rather than later we'll be able to come up with a name and release it.
We'll talk a little bit more as we continue on with Ron Francis on the NHL Executive Suite about the expansion process and the rules and the comparisons to Vegas, and we're going to talk a little bit about your playing days in Hartford and Carolina and Pittsburgh. But let's go to where hockey started for you in Sault Ste. Marie. What was life like for a young Ron Francis in Sault Ste. Marie?
It's a great hockey town. Great place to grow up. A lot of snow in the winter, so you're skating on the outdoor rinks a lot of nights, playing ball hockey. you know, you had real good coaches growing up and opportunities to play and travel a lot of tournaments. You know, my dad was a steel worker, went to work in the steel plant when he was 18 you know, worked 41 years in the plant. My mom was kind of a stay-at-home mom. My younger brother, Ricky, had some learning disabilities, and when he was younger, was a bit of a challenge. He's probably taking about 25 to 30 seizures a day, but, you know, my mom and dad stuck with it, and we were able to find a, for lack of better terms, a mega vitamin diet, took him off of dairy products and put him on these vitamins, dramatically reduced his seizures, and he went on to, you know, hold a job well over 20 years in a furniture store delivering furniture, as well as, you know, winning 8 medals at the World Winter Games and Special Olympics. So we had a lot of things going on in our house and in the Sioux growing up, but all great memories.
That's fabulous. Now, what kind of an impact did his, the way that he lived, the way your brother lived, and his success in the Special Olympics and his overcoming the odds and, you know, taking his disadvantage and turning it into an advantage, how did that affect you or impact you as a kid growing up?
Well, I think it was a huge impact. You know, in the earlier years, you're kind of helping and watching, you know, if we woke up in the middle of the night with the bunk bed shaking because he was taking a seizure and making sure he wasn't swallowing his tongue, and and get a hold of my mom and dad, but watching them go through the battles and not give up and continue to seek, you know, kind of a solution and ultimately get to a point where his quality of life was real good. And, you know, it just teaches you so many life lessons, right? And there's going to be challenges in your way, and, you know, you have to find ways to overcome them.
You're such a proud brother. Did you ever have to stick up for him back in the day with some kids who weren't so bright?
I'm sure there was one or two times, but you know, more times than not, it was awesome. He's obviously a big fan of mine and big fan of hockey, and you know, I got to it was kind of a cool experience. The 1 year I was heavily involved in the Special Olympics, they asked me to present the gold medal at the World Winter Games in Collingwood, Ontario, and it turns out that he was actually the one that won the gold medal. So,
wow.
It was pretty cool to hang the gold medal over his head.
That's amazing. So some comparisons to you winning the Stanley Cup, I guess. He had his Stanley Cup.
Yeah. He won, I think he was 8 medals overall. So, yeah, I only got 2 cups. He got 8 of those. So he's maybe a little bit ahead of me on that regard.
Yes, he did. So he's a little bit ahead of you there. Let's talk a little bit about your parents as well. And I know you were close with them and you saw your dad work hard. You know, there's a young player in the league, Adam Henrique, who grew up on a tobacco farm in Canada. And he always would say, you know, I tell my dad, I love you, Dad, but I cannot be a tobacco farmer when I grow up. It is way too much work. And it really helped motivate him. What did, you know, seeing your dad work so hard and being in the mines and where he was, how did that, you know, affect you growing up and wanting to maybe do something else?
Yeah, no, I mean, my dad lost his father when he was 15, so he actually went to the plant at 18 to support his mom and 2 sisters. And
so he had to support his parents?
Yeah, he was supporting his mom and 2 sisters, you know, working in the plant, and then, you know, got married to my mom. And when I was a kid, they used to do tours of the steel plant where you could bring your family through, and he worked in the rail mill. And the last portion of the tour, you kind of go over top of this bridge, and you know, the rails are coming on, they're glowing hot red, and the saw is cutting them at a certain length they need to be cut at, and it's noisy and hot and loud. And I remember grabbing me on top of that bridge, and he said, "You see this?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Make sure you go to school." And that was kind of, I think your parents always want you to kind of, you know, hopefully do something that maybe is a little better, a better opportunity for you. And certainly, and they made sure that, you know, we didn't have a lot of money, but they made sure that I had every opportunity to be successful, and whether it was schooling or sports or what have you.
So, you know, we had Kyle Dubas on, one of your peers, the GM of the Maple Leafs, of course, from Sault Ste. Marie. He was talking a lot about how crazy the community is there, though, for the hockey, and there was so much pressure. And he was like, "No, I'm serious. There's so much pressure, even on the kids. I know you played even peewee there." Did it sort of set you up to thrive in pressure situations when you got into the NHL?
Yeah, I mean, I think the people of the Sioux are very passionate about their hockey, and especially about their players from the Sioux. So I think maybe they want to see you succeed so well that there is a little extra pressure on you. Little side note, Kyle's grandfather, Walter Dumas, was my coach in novice hockey. Kyle's grandmother, grandfather, actually my brother's godparents. So the families are close. I do know Kyle well, but it is just a great place to grow up. And, you know, I not only played my minor hockey there, but I ended up playing for the Greyhounds. I played my junior hockey there too, which is probably even the next step of pressure when you come out of Sault Ste. Marie. But loved every minute of it, and you know, great city to be tell people you're from.
So when did you first see Kyle in a professional manner? Probably like when he was 14 or something.
Yeah, no, I think we had the conversations before he was taking the job at Sault Ste. Marie with the Greyhounds. And, you know, we talk often weekly or biweekly or monthly for sure. We have a lot of conversations because we're good friends.
All right, let's talk a little bit about you then getting to the next level and in the NHL. This might be an easy question for you, or maybe not. Who's the best player you ever played with?
Played with?
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to get a lot of people mad at me. actually, probably the one line I had the most fun playing on, they didn't put us together until the end of November, was I got to center Jaromir Jagr and Mario Lemieux. So that was a lot of fun playing with those two guys.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Now, Jaromir Jagr said about you that you are the most underrated player in the history of the league. And actually, so I was going back and knowing we were going to chat, 549 goals, I looked it up, and 1,249 assists. So I was like, whoa. So considering that some people do call you very underrated, why do you think that is? Why do you think you were underrated when you played?
I don't know if it's underrated. I just, you know, I wasn't the fastest skater. I wasn't the, you know, the guy with the hardest shot, or the, you know, maybe my game didn't stand out. But, you know, it's kind of like the turtle in the hare. Just kept plugging away and doing my thing. And was fortunate to play with a lot of good players and get a lot of opportunities to put some points on the boards and have some success. And at the end of the day, it added up to a pretty good career.
So the question then becomes, you know, what you do for a living now is judge personnel and draft and try to find, you know, great players, good players. So if you, you know, didn't necessarily skate the fastest or have, you know, the niftiest moves or whatever that was, how did somebody know to draft you fourth overall? How did somebody know, or who looked at you, and what do you think it was that they knew that you would be this kind of player?
Well, I played in the Sioux that year with a player by the name of Gordy Dineen, and Bill Dineen was his dad, and Bill Dineen was the head amateur scout for the Hartford Whalers at the time. So Bill and watching Gordy got to see me play a lot of hockey, and Gordy and I kind of hung out off the ice. I think Bill got intel from Gordy as to the kind of person I was and my character. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, you know, probably a lot of people don't remember, but at that draft, I think they were planning on drafting Bobby Carpenter. They actually had his dad at the table, and then Washington made a deal to get in front. And they were more or less left with me, but I know Bill was pretty happy to see me walk up to the table based on you know, what he said. So it was, you know, it's such a challenge when you're drafting kids that are 18 years old. So you try and do as much homework as you can, not only watching them play and how they play and the style they play, try and pick up little things and what they do on and off the ice, and you try and get as much, you know, the character reference from people that know them to make sure that there's no guarantee they're going to be good, but you try to get as much to hopefully know that you're taking somebody that has a chance to continue to grow and get better and be a real good player in the NHL at some point.
So still part of one of the biggest trades in the history of the NHL in March of, I think, 1991. When you think back on that now, what do you think of when you think about getting traded that day?
Well, you know, I think it was the first time I'd been traded. I'd been in Hartford for 10 years, and I think if you care about what you do and who you are and how you operate, what you bring to the game every night, you know, it means somebody doesn't want you, and that, you know, I think that kind of stings and it hurts a bit. But you know, I never forget the response I got from the people of Hartford. I mean, they'd kind of watched me grow up there, get married there, have my first child there, and you know, their support was tremendous, you know, through it all, and still something I appreciate today. But, you know, on the flip side, you come to realize that, hey, somebody didn't want you, but somebody else wanted you. And when I got to Pittsburgh, Bob Johnson sat me down and said there was this kid there by the name of Mario Lemieux, and he was going to be their number one centerman. But, you know, he felt like it's to help the team. So that's what we tried to do. And, you know, my line that first cup year was Joey Mullen and Kevin Stevens, so two pretty good players I got to play with there. And the following year it was Joey Mullen and Jaromir Jagr. So, you know, it was fun times in Pittsburgh. I know it's no longer a blue-collar town, but it still had that kind of mentality, which fit my mold perfectly coming out of Sault Ste. Marie, the steel town, my dad being a steel worker. And, you know, I certainly appreciated all the success we had, but more importantly, appreciated the fans there and how they treated us, you know, during our time there. And even after I got traded, they were tremendous as well.
So it sounds like you also, in addition to winning the Stanley Cups and having a lifelong friend in Mario Lemieux and everything that, you know, he did on the ice and the, you know, the opportunity to play with him, that you got your taste for wine from him.
Yes and no. I had my first glass of wine when I was 9 years old. I have an Italian background. So, and I think it was probably 7/8 ginger ale and 1/8 of red wine. But my grandfather used to make his wine in the basement. So I started having some red wine, basically at family meals on Sunday night at home, and that's kind of where I developed my love for it. Certainly Mario was at a different level. I think at a lot of meals we went to together, we would partake and share some good red wine and kind of help grow my love for it and branch out into different aspects of it. You know, French wines specifically, where I was more Italian, he was more French, so. But it was a great, great learning curve.
Yeah, I bet. So we're not giving Mario credit for you trying wine. You came with quite a palate yourself, but it's interesting, talking, to your generation of players and stars and Hall of Famers. And it's been kind of a topic for us because on the NHL Executive Suite, you know, we talk to executives, and your generation is not heading to the coaching box or to behind the bench, whether it's, you know, Steve Yzerman or Bill Guerin or Ron Francis, and the list is quite long of the GMs that we're talking to, that they're way more interested in the front office and being general managers. You know, I know you did some work as an owner in Carolina, and Mario certainly done that with Pittsburgh. Why do you think that is, that your group of big-time players has headed to the front office versus coaching?
I can't speak for the other guys. I know for me, I just never had a passion to be a coach. You know, I think I was fortunate for 2.5 years in Carolina. Jim Rutherford gave me that opportunity to go on the bench, and I was on the bench with Paul Maurice and got to experience that. But again, it was, I think, you know, in the past, a lot of people say it's the closest thing to play because you're closest to the ice and stuff, and that was never really my kind of goal or vision. I always saw myself more in the management role than the coaching role. So that's kind of how it evolved for me. But, you know, I've played with a lot of great players over the time and a lot of former Whalers. You know, Joel Quenneville being at the top of the list. Also, Samuelson, Kevin Dineen, John Anderson, Dave Tippett, Brad Shaw. A lot of these guys, you know, Randy Lettuce, who are coached for, a lot of these guys went on to coaching. So I think it's really just kind of what your passion is and where you think, you know, you can best fit or where you want to be, and hopefully you get that opportunity. And fortunately for me, I did.
So one more thing about the wine. I've heard you make the comparison to it takes patience to grow grapes and takes patience to find and wait for a great wine. And patience was a bit of a buzzword when you left Carolina because it seemed like you had some of it and the new owner didn't. Are we waiting? Are we not prepared to wait for players to mature in today's NHL, or where do you think we are?
Well, I think it's a lot of a lot similar, I guess, at times to, you know, society in general. It's almost like the instant gratification. I think if you're building something, you have to have a plan, you have to have it in place, and you got to be willing to stick to it to build it the right way. I know, you know, I reached out to Ken Holland early in the process to just sort of pick his brain, and you know, I figured he's got a lot of experience and a lot of success. Who better to talk to? You know, he thought it took 5 to 7 years to build something and build something right. You know, I think we felt we were really close in Carolina. We were only 4 years in, and we thought we were ready to turn, and we did it, you know, with a budget that was in the 57 million range the last 3 years. So we felt we were close. The new owner and I think, as he said, we couldn't be more different in personality, and he wanted to make a change. So that's his priority. He owned the team. I didn't. And, you know, we move on.
So watching a video of the day that you were announced out in Seattle, and the ownership group comes in, of course you recognize Jerry Bruckheimer right away. He's this, you know, big-time Hollywood producer and television producer, for anyone who doesn't know. You know, he was Beverly Hills Cop and Top Gun and all the CSIs. I think there's five different CSIs.
Pirates of the Caribbean. The list goes on and on.
What's he like to work with?
He's been great. I mean, all the owners have been fantastic. It's I'd be lying if I didn't say I was blown away when I first came out here to meet with Todd Leiwicki. And, you know, part of the interview process, I mean, they're trying to understand me and I'm trying to understand them. And early in the process, they brought me into the office and kind of assembled the business staff that they had in place. And I was really taken back by, you know, the diversity of the group, the intelligence of the group, the personalities, and the, you know, the fact that everybody seemed to just love doing what they're doing and get along and want to help each other and do what's right for the organization. And that was really appealing to me. You know, I went through the interview process with a bunch of different owners. And, you know, everybody I talked to, you know, were asking the right questions, were saying the right things. And, you know, they want to build a successful franchise, but they want to do it right. They want to be active in the community. They want to be diverse in nature and how we approach things. And I think that's really exciting. It's, you know, a lot of what we're doing is fresh and outside the box, but I think that's really exciting to be a part of.
Did Jerry Bruckheimer have to sort of disavow himself from being an LA Kings fan? Is he done with that now?
He hasn't mentioned it around me, so. No, I think Jerry, first and foremost, is just an absolute great hockey fan. He loves the game. He loves talking hockey. He loves discussing different topics. And it's only been a short time, but I've really enjoyed the conversations we've had in the short time we've been together here. And I look forward to that relationship growing over time.
Well, certainly being in Seattle, you are in the heart of a lot of technology. As you know, we had a great chat with Doug Wilson last year about being in Silicon Valley and all the technology aspects of that and the people he's surrounded by. You're in a similar situation. Is technology a part, aside from the analytics you can use and maybe some of the really smart people you're going to have nearby to work for you? Give us your take on some of the ways that technology may impact the franchise.
Well, we are certainly in the hotbed for technology. I mentioned the group of owners, but I did mention that one of those owners is Andy Jassy, the head of AWS. So, big player to Amazon. And technology is certainly going to be a big part of what we do, top to bottom in the organization, from everything we do, the in-game experience and fan-related stuff, concerts, you name it, as well as what we try and build on the hockey side and trying to help us make us be successful. And I think I was fortunate, when I got here, Alexander Mendrick, he was already part of the organization. And, I think Alex is very bright and we've got some great ideas. Hopefully we can pull them off in regards to what we want to do analytically.
Okay, a couple more things. Let's talk hockey. Now, much to the chagrin, I think, of the 31 other general managers who gave some pretty good players to Vegas, the expansion rules are not changing. Is that right?
That is our understanding, unless some changes between now and June of 21, yeah.
So do you think the teams will adjust? Do you think you'll have a different experience than George McPhee did? How do you see it playing out?
Well, I mean, that's what everybody's speculating. On one hand, we have a little more time, but on the other hand, I think the GMs have a little more time to prepare. They have some experience. They've gone through it, recently. I think George and Kelly did a great job in what they did. I think sometimes guys took criticism, but at the end of the day, if you protect, a player that's a significant portion of your roster and you're a guy that you know that can play and in return for protecting him, give up a pick or a prospect or what have you, I'm not sure that's necessarily a bad decision. But, I think we're curious to see how it plays out. I think there's a lot of people that have opinions, but, we'll do everything we can to draft the best possible team for Seattle and continue to build it out after the draft.
your timeline for hiring a coach? Are you looking now? What are you looking for? And do you have a feeling it might be someone you know or you're comfortable with, familiar with, or it might be somebody new?
I think we're open to both scenarios as far as new and stuff. I think the one thing I would like to have is somebody kind of with NHL experience, just because, you know, they've been there and done it, and they have a track record. As far as the timing wise, you know, I don't think we're in a hurry. We got a little bit of a runway here. Take that time and use it wisely. And unfortunately, in that profession, similar to the GMs, it can change dramatically at times. You know, I think we'll be a lot closer to the summer of 21 before we make that final selection.
Well, it just sounds like you're in such a great place, and not just the city of Seattle, but, you know, surrounded by really intelligent folks, and that must be so energizing. I mean, I can tell, you know, chatting with you how energizing it is to be around some of those people with, you know, big ideas and you know, doing new things in the NHL, and really excited to see it get going. Maybe it'll be here before we know it. Thank you so much for doing this.
Well, my pleasure, Deb. Yeah, we're excited. We think this franchise, when it rolls out, will be pretty unique in a lot of areas, and something that hopefully the NHL will enjoy.
I mean, you don't necessarily think of Ron Francis as trailing only Wayne Gretzky in assists all time. He is second all time in the history of the league with over 1,200 assists. He is sharp as all get out, and it was great to talk to him. We thank him for being with us. We've got a reminder, check out our other shows on the NHL Podcast Network. We've got NHL Fantasy on Ice for all of your fantasy needs, and NHL at the Rink with Dan Rosen. Both of them are great listens. Feel free to drop us a line, send us a review. Love to hear from you. And until next time, I'm Deb Placey on the NHL Executive Suite.